Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Well, it's been an interesting week and a half. The yes vote from the Irish referendum not so long ago on same-sex marriage has really excited things, for better or for worse, depending on what your position is. A traditionally very Catholic country, 85% Catholic, saying yes in a referendum to same-sex marriage. Who would have thought? Now, the yes vote in the Irish referendum was a bit surprising for some of us outside, I suppose. And polling in Australia and the USA shows majority support for same-sex marriage or for marriage equality, depending on how you want to look at it. And of course, the Prime Minister's sister, Christine Foster's just been on Sunday Profile only an hour ago, very optimistic about the law changing in favour. August, perhaps, she says. She might have some inside running, but who knows. Way back in July 2012, we had a parliamentary committee who voted in favour of changing the Marriage Act to allow for same-sex marriage, and the committee got something like 80,000 submissions, I think, and about 46,000 of them were supportive, which means, of course, there were, 34-odd thousand that weren't. Well, it didn't happen, but it is on again, because opposition leader Bill Shorten's put up the bill in Parliament, but it's not a bipartisan bill. It has got discussion up and underway again. This issue of marriage and marriage equality, it gets people engaged, for better and for worse, and the question seems to me to be, roughly, is it about redefining marriage, or is it about making marriage equal? And there's two ways to look at that. Joining us in this hour, we've got a stellar cast. We've got the Catholic Bishop of Broken Bay, Bishop Peter Comensoli. He's Bishop of the northern region of Sydney. It goes sort of up from Spitbridge way north of Sydney. Bishop Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Noel.
We've got in our Hobart studios Rodney Croom, AM, the National Convener of Marriage Equality, and also voted Tasmanian Australian of the Year for 2015. Rodney, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Noel. Thanks for having me on.
On phone, Dr. Muriel Porter, OAM. Now, Muriel's been on General Synod for the Anglican Church there, Anglican lay leader, journalist, historian, and author of Sex, Marriage and the Church, Patterns of Change. Muriel Porter, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Noel.
And Andy Judd. Reverend Andy Judd is a minister at St. Barnabas Anglican Church on Broadway in Sydney. Now, that's a big university church, lots of young people there, connected to Evangelical Union. Andy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Noel. It's good to be here.
Andy, can I actually start with you? You wrote a really interesting article. I was quite struck by it. And I had to read it twice before I could work out whether you supported Bill Shorten's bill or not.
That's probably not a good thing for clarity.
Well, I thought you might get clobbered, I've got to say. But it was a subtle argument you were putting forward. On the one hand, you weren't supporting the bill.
No, that's right.
But you were supporting values that the bill had built into it. Now, what were you trying to say?
Yeah, probably, in hindsight, maybe too subtle for Facebook on a Monday afternoon. But what this is a really important issue. I think all the people around the table can freely admit that. And it's been disappointing, I think, for many of us that we haven't had anything like the respectful, constructive meeting of minds that something of this magnitude really, really deserves. And I guess what I was hoping to do is for the Christians in my social networks to try to get them at least to understand that there are good motives coming from the other side proposing this legislation. If the motive is to help people of minority sexualities achieve equal citizenship, to be respected as persons, then as Christians we should be on board with that. But on the other side, we have some concerns or some nervousness about gay marriage. It's not just because we want to deny people equality or anything like that. It's concerns about family and children particularly. And I think if we can try to meet our minds a little bit better, that would be a good thing for everyone.
Rodney Croom, for you, what's at stake in all of this? It's come up before, hasn't it, a couple of years ago. What are the main issues at stake?
Well, Noel, there's a range of issues. I mean, people talk most often about equality, and obviously we're talking about legal equality there, the fact that same-sex relationships aren't treated equally in the law, but when we're talking about equality, we're also talking about something deeper, and that is the stigma that still attaches to same-sex relationships, and the fact that the failure of the law to allow same-sex couples to marry sends the message that same-sex relationships are somehow second-rate, or that the qualities in our relationships don't meet the qualities or come up to the standards that people associate with marriage. So there's that issue about equality. There's an issue about freedom as well. The fact is, at the moment, the government tells me who I can and can't marry. It says, if I want to marry a woman, that's fine, but the person that I love most in the world, my partner of a decade now, somehow I'm not allowed to marry him because he's a man. The government determines one of the most important choices in my life. I can't make that choice. And on top of that, of course, there is the issue of the importance of marriage. Marriage matters to many people. Marriage provides a framework, a universal language, if you like, of love and commitment. And to be excluded from that when you're in a loving relationship, particularly if you're raising children, can be a great disadvantage to same-sex couples and their families, and foster social exclusion. So there's a range of different issues here for me.
Bishop Peter Comensoli, I began by talking about, is it redefining marriage, is it equality? Rodney's spoken about equality straight out there. Mm. How do you what's your take on it?
From our perspective, it's not so much the beginning of the discussion with the equality ones. It's beginning of the discussion around what's the nature of marriage. And
it is about the definition of marriage.
For me, it's about the definition of marriage, yes. And when you start with that, you're starting to looking at, well, what's the nature of this thing that we call marriage, an institution, and so on? How does it fit into the very broad range of relationships, loving relationships that human beings engage in, whether it's friendship or sexual love or parental love or many of the other forms of love, you know, the very Australian mateship kind. Mm. We've just celebrated or commemorated better the great sacrificial loves of those who give their lives in war and so on. So there's all sorts of kinds of loves, and all of those forms of loves, because God is love, are to be respected and honoured. Forms of love are to be respected and honoured as forms of love. But friendship is not the same as parental love, which is not the same as desiring love, which is not the same as married love. So getting to the sense of what's each of those particular kinds of relationships, what's particular about them, is really important. And marriage is, in that sense, a particular kind of love.
Well, the debate here, of course, is about whether Marriage Act, the words of the Marriage Act, will be changed to make it not between only a man and a woman, but to allow it broader. Mm. And that's often what is the key to Christian concerns about this, isn't it? So that is at the bottom of it, isn't it? Yes. Man and woman. This has to be man and woman.
Why is that particularly a marriage, as distinct from a relationship that two people of the same sex might be able to enter into, and have all of those other dimensions of kinds of love associated
like
with
it? Like a civil union, by contrast, is that the sort of other type you're suggesting? Mm.
Well, there are other relationships. There are other kinds of love.
Muriel Porter, can I ask you, you've actually written on this, on the changing nature of marriage and its development and progress. And I think the argument has been made that it's always, I've seen it written, it's always between a man and a woman. But how has it changed when you went into it?
Well, marriage has changed dramatically over the centuries. It's not that long ago in historical time that the notion of love in marriage was a rather unique concept. Marriage was for all sorts of reasons, for kinship reasons, for tribal reasons, for financial property reasons. In fact, there were generations of people in Europe who were not of the first elite who didn't bother to get married formally because they didn't have any property to bequeath or leave. But they continued in very strong monogamous relationships. It's just that marriage itself wasn't all that important because of its connection to property, etc. So marriage has changed a lot, and of course it's changed very much in the last few decades. I notice it in the way young people around us. Heavens, I've just celebrated my 42nd wedding anniversary. I'm a grandmother.
Congratulations.
But it's changed so much since we were married. I see the changing relationships. I mean, church marriages have plummeted across the board.
Less than half now, of course, that's in this country.
Many less than half. And young people, most of them, it's quite surprising if they don't actually live together for quite a while, actually have their children before they get, you know, their children, often the page boy and the flower girl. So things have changed a lot. And what concerns me, and pick up on another point, you mentioned the Christian view. There is more than one Christian view on this, Noel. And I think the sad thing is that those of us who have a more progressive, moderate, I daren't say liberal view, because that sort of sets all the flames going, we've almost been silenced in the churches because of the anger and aggression of those conservative Christians who insist there can only be one view of same-sex relationships and that they are sinful. And I take up the point Mr. Judd said about wanting to have an adult conversation. Yes, please, please invite in the many bishops and clergy I know in the Anglican Church who actually privately and quietly support full equality in marriage for same-sex relationships. But don't speak, because they will be labelled in synods, in standing committees, in other places, not very far from where Mr. Judd ministers, and condemned virtually as heretics. So this makes an adult conversation between Christians on how they see the love of God being able to be expressed in relationships between people of the same sex just unable to happen. So there's more than one Christian view that's got to be recognised and honoured. And also, I think we have to recognise that setting up the ideal of a man and woman in the nuclear family and the children, etc., etc., that has changed dramatically. There are quite a lot of children now living in same-sex relationships with two fathers or two mothers who are not able to be married to make that a more formal relationship in that sense. So we can't pretend this isn't already happening. And if we really want to protect children and look after them, the best thing we can do is to fully honour the relationships in which they live.
Rodney Croom, can I bring you in there? We're talking about, I think, definitional, aren't we? It's the definition of marriage which is at stake here. And I think it's quite clear that your inclusive approach means it shouldn't depend on the gender of the persons in involved in it. But what do you say to those who have this belief?
I'm glad that we're having a discussion about the definition of marriage, because like Muriel, I agree that the definition, the legal definition and our cultural understanding of marriage has evolved a lot over the last half century. In Australian law today, a marriage is clearly, and I think most Australians understand it to be, the union of two equal partners. An exclusive union, an enduring union, a committed union. In the words, to cite from Bill Shorten's speech the other day in Parliament, I thought it was quite a good line. He said, we're not just talking about two people who live together, but two people who can't live without each other. Two people who are so closely bound that they want to spend their lives together in an enduring conjugal union. And if that is how we understand marriage in Australia today, then it's a definition that not only can include same-sex couples, but the question is, why doesn't it include same-sex couples? In our law, we recognise, in every state and in Commonwealth law, we recognise same-sex partners as de facto married partners. They're effectively married in the eyes of the law. That's what de facto partner means. So why then do we draw the line at the M word? Why can't we apply that, the word marriage, to these partnerships when they are already in every other way effectively marriage. Now, I know that we heard before that there are different kinds of relationships and different kinds of love, and certainly there are. We need to distinguish those, but in my view, there is no distinction in the quality of love and the nature of love between and commitment between two men, two women, or a man and a woman. Now, of course, I imagine that a response to that will be, well, from various prelates, that...
Well, we've got one here, don't you worry.
that the relationship of a man and a woman is somehow open to procreation in a way that two men or two women aren't. But, and yes, in our culture, there still is a strong association between marriage and children. There isn't in the law. Of course, there's no prerequisite to be able to have children or to want to have children to marry. We don't take marriage licenses away from
State
partners.
Law. You're talking about civil marriage. You're talking
civil
about
marriage.
That.
We don't take marriage certificates away from partners when they can no longer have children, when they're too old for that. But there's a cultural association, and I believe that association is because marriage can, in some cases, provide children with a greater sense of security and stability in their lives. And it's a social good in that regard. And as Muriel said, if that's the case, if we believe that marriage is good for kids, then why would we deny the many children being raised by same-sex couples in Australia the opportunity of having married parents?
Andy Judd's desperate to say something. I can see he's very keen.
I actually would like to... Dr. Porter, I'm very glad you're here, actually. I'd be really interested to know whether you would agree with Rodney. I read Rodney's book about... a very good book, presenting his case. But I'm very interested to know what Muriel thinks about parenthood, whether it is best for children to be raised by a mother and a father, because I know Muriel's been a very eloquent critic of churches, the episcopacy, for not having, I think she said, the wholeness that women bring to our leadership. I wonder, Muriel, what you think of parenting. Do you think that there is something unique that mothers bring to the arrangement?
Well, of course, being a mother and a grandmother, I think there is a very important element that comes with that relationship. But I also know that that is not the case always. Not always. I've known some pretty tough and not very nice mothers around the traps, and I'm sure we all have. Women are not always perfect mothers, perfect wives, perfect priests, perfect bishops, anything else you want to name. And I think as long as children have the love of at least one good parent, because that's often the case. We have so many single parents these days for reasons often not of their choosing, as we're only too well aware. Children do need love, care, commitment and support. I would ideally always want them to have that from two people in a committed, ongoing formal relationship that is honoured by all. As the old prayer book said, marriage is an estate to be honoured by all. I would like to see that for two people bringing up children, whether they're men or women, because I'm sure they would always go out of their way to make sure that those children had also had the opposite gender's experience and part with their lives if they possibly could, as do single parents, single mothers who then seek their, you know, an uncle or somebody to try and give that masculine side to the children's upbringing. I think it's very dangerous to idealise the nuclear family to such an extent that we just are blind to all the permutations of relationships that are out there.
It's an interesting question that you brought up there, the nuclear family, because Bishop Peter Consolator, I'd like to ask you about this, because, of course, 1.3 billion Catholics, if you go to the Middle East, you'll find arranged marriages are still practiced among Catholics in some places. Mm. You'll find different styles of marriage. You will find different approaches to what constitutes it. But we've been talking so far
you'll
about the love.
You'll also find different styles of family. So the nuclear family is not the only... model of family that we have presented in to us in the world.
Well, common sol is Italian, isn't it? I expect there's nonnas and uncles and aunts all over the place.
Exactly, exactly. Right. And in other cultures, the very definition of a marriage, of a family, couldn't be confined to just mum and dad and, you know, X number of children. I think I want to go back to where Rodney was taking us with the discussion around this definition of marriage. And I think he's made some good points around that. We're all going to be able to talk about various relationships that we know of people that we know who have great love for one another. But when it comes to the legal definition of marriage, we're talking about a structural thing, not just the various people that we know and the stories that we are a part of ourselves in our own family situations and so on. So what sort of structure is required? And I think Rodney started to name those sort of aspects. And the way that I think about this is in sort of three Fs, if you like. There's you've got to be free, you've got to be faithful, you've got to be fruitful. These are those three.
Oh, you want children in the deal, clearly, though. You want children in the deal. That's very Catholic.
Well, yes. Well, I'm Catholic bishop. What do you expect? But all three are important to get us to what is the structure of marriage. So if you're not free to enter into this relationship, it's not a marriage relationship. If it's lacking the faithfulness, the sense of aiming for the permanence, if to exclusion of all others and so on, that's the faithfulness. The fruitfulness is the one area that Rodney didn't mention, but from our perspective is so essential to the nature of marriage.
Well, in fact, if somebody came to you, Bishop Peter Comensoli, and said, I want to get married, but we're not having children, I just want to be clear about that, you probably wouldn't end up marrying them, would you?
In the Catholic Church, no, because one of the essential elements is missing. The refusal, this is what I'm talking about here, a refusal to have...
Not because they don't want to.
Yes. The refusal.
But that is an understanding of Catholic marriage which is quite particular, that says it must be open to the begetting of children. Mm. Now, we've got parents who are doing that, of course, same sex, who are having children, or have children actually from their previous relationship which might have broken down. For example, Christine Foster, the Prime Minister's sister, had children in her marriage and now she's in another relationship.
Well, and heterosexual marriages all over the place
break down and they... Yes. Of course. But the thing is that they are open to children now. Is that going to get you across the line as a Catholic bishop or as a Christian?
In any situation where third parties start getting involved in your sex life, then we're going to have difficulties. So whether a heterosexual couple or a homosexual couple, if there's third parties involved, surrogacy or some form of technological, artificial involvement in the having of children, then we're going to be... So the bearing of children out of their lovemaking that a couple... bring about new life is the key point about the fruitfulness for us.
So in vitro, for example, is forbidden among Catholics. Surrogacy is forbidden among Catholics. It has to be a child conceived in natural sexual union in marriage. That's basically the bottom
emphasis
line.
Is on this natural sexual union, yeah. Out of the love comes the life.
Andy Judd, are we going to get furious agreement from you on that?
I don't know about furious, but I think Jesus was able to set out an ideal. Yeah. And yet deal with the messiness of life in a compassionate way. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'm an inner city kind of church. We have people involved in our community for whom life is incredibly messy and we...
Well, you live in Newtown anyway. You've got to have gay... In fact, in your article, you mentioned you had some gay friends over. Well, implied...
Well, I don't want to use the my gay best friend argument.
But you do. That's
well, I think
point.
Everybody... I mean, I live in... You asked me earlier if I have any gay friends.
Who
I live in Glebe.
Noel?
You have to
Who
actively
doesn't?
Try not to. And I think there's a great deal of compassion for... I mean, just around the corner on Friday night, a transgender lady was bashed as she did her job. I mean, that's horrible. And I think we can, as Christians, deal with the messiness of life and say that we want to kind of stop that kind of thing. But we're also, I think, need to look at the ideal of family and marriage. And I think we do agree on the Protestant side of things that marriage has something to do with children. Mm. Now, not in the specifics. Dr. Porter very rightly pointed out that not every couple...
There are different Christian views. Yep.
Every addition, also, that not every couple can embody, for whatever reason, the full ideal. But I think we're just a bit... Well, I'm just a bit nervous about letting go of the ideal and asking... I just want to ask, what is it about marriage that works so well? What is at the core of this institution? The prayer book says that marriage is an honourable estate to be honoured by all. What is it at the core of that should be honoured?
Well, Dr. Muriel Potter, go.
I would say quite clearly what makes it so special and so important is the love between the two people who are partners in that marriage, whether it's children, whether it's anything else, is the, almost the added extras. And the interesting thing is when Cranmer wrote the, put together the prayer book service that's so familiar to people through movies and everything else, where there were the three causes of matrimony. And he put first was procreation, and then was, you know, ordering sex, and then the mutual love support the others should have for each other. And he was immediately ticked off by one of the most important reformers, Martin Bucer, who said, no, no, what should come first is the mutual love, comfort and support they should have for each other. And the modern forms of service in the Anglican Church certainly have made that the priority, rather than children, rather than the proper ordering of your sexual life, etc. And for me, as a married woman, that to me is the most, certainly the most, without peer, the love, support and comfort you have for each other in sickness and in health and all the rest of it. Children, yes, very, very special. Grandchildren, even better almost. All of that, I agree with all of that. But there's, that's got to be the core of the marriage relationship, the love, support and comfort they have for each other.
Andy?
I would say there's more to it. I guess from my reading...
What is it? Well, you're married too, of course.
I am married. Yeah. From my reading, at least, of the prayer book, There are kind of three main purposes to marriage, and of course love is paramount. I agree with that with you, Dr. Porter. But the proper kind of context for the good ordering of society is also in there. And I actually don't think that marriage laws are about honouring love. I just don't. I didn't register my marriage because I need the bureaucracy of the Australian government to recognise my love. I don't think that's what marriage is for. I think the question about marriage, for me at least, for what it's worth, I think it's about ordering of society, and I think it's about primarily the interests of children. And so I'm interested, Dr. Porter, that you think that children actually benefit from having, ideally, in the ideal, mothers presumably as well as fathers. And so I think we're actually closer together here than maybe
We're probably very close together indeed. All I'm trying to, I think, and I do honour your views and those of others, I would just like my views and those that I represent to be honoured as well. And I do seek to see that, and the other thing is ordering of society, heavens above, the Christian churches are in such a minority now, we actually can't demand how society should be ordered. Of course, we have the right to make our views known. Of course we do, like all other groups. But we simply don't have the same position as Thomas Cranmer had and the others over centuries, where what they said went. It's a very different situation. Whatever we think about what marriage is or shouldn't be, we can't say how society should be ordered because we no longer have that sort of influence in society. As the primate of the Anglican Church said in his statement, it's up to the legislation to make the laws. This is the laws of the country, not for us to say what they should be, except to say, please remember us and let our clergy have freedom of conscience, which of course they already have, because some Anglican priests will not marry divorced people, even though in church law nationally that is possible. So well, people
Catholics
already
are there too, don't worry.
Well, indeed. But yeah, what I'm saying is there already is freedom of conscience. So that, you know, nobody, no priest, no minister has to marry any two people who come to him. If they were to say, as the bishop has just said, you know, we don't intend to have children, then of course you have the right to say, well, okay, we're not going to marry you. There is already that freedom of conscience. So that's a bit of a